Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and today we're going to start the show by talking with you about writing your memoir. There are all sorts of memoirs out there about addiction and struggles, about breakups and unions, about growing up, about growing old. Some are funny, some are sad, and we're going to get some insights on how you could approach your memoir with our guest, Kate Hopper. She's the author of Ready for Air, A Journey Through Premature Motherhood, and Use Your Words, A Writing Guide for Mothers. She teaches creative writing through Ashland University's online MFA program and at Modern Well and the Loft Literary Center in Minneapolis. She leads retreats for women writers in the Midwest, and she joins us from our studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Kate Hopper, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Larry. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's talk about, first about some boundaries on what a memoir is and maybe what it isn't, because it seems like memoirs can get confused with autobiographies. So what's the difference? What's a memoir?
Yeah, they do get confused. And really, an autobiography is the chronology of an entire life, while a memoir can zoom in on a specific aspect or a time period in a writer's life. So it could be a year or a month or a few months. And that time period, whatever it is, provides a frame, you know, to hold the story. And then the author can weave in relevant reflection and backstory. But this confusion between memoir and autobiography is why you sometimes hear people say, oh, she seems too young to have written a memoir. because there is no age at which, you know, you don't need to reach a certain age to write a successful and compelling memoir. So usually when people say that, they're thinking about it in terms of writing a whole life, somebody looking back at 75 and writing their entire life down.
You seem to concentrate a bit on women and mothers and their memoirs. Is there a difference between the approach a woman might take or a man might versus a man in writing a memoir? Or is the process pretty similar no matter what the sex?
I think the process is similar. I mean, it's somebody coming to this work with a story that they feel like they want to get out into the world, and also maybe needing to understand more of what happened in their life at a certain time. And so I think that's pretty much the same for men and women. And I focus on women just because I feel like sometimes it's harder for women to get their voices out there. And some of their stories are not taken as seriously if they're women writers. So that's sort of where I put a lot of my energy. But I work with both men and women on their memoirs.
Okay. Well, to sit down and say, I'm going to write a memoir, that's hard work. And there are plenty of excuses why you can't get started on it today versus, you know, tomorrow or sometime down the road. How do you start on a memoir writing process and then stick with it?
Well, I think classes really help kind of kickstart and give you that sort of structure that you need to get going and get started and to start thinking about craft issues. So it's not just your story that you're getting down, but you have to use all of those craft things that a fiction writer would use, you know, scene and character development and a sense of place. And so classes can really help you start thinking about that and just get you in the regular habit of writing weekly. I mean, those weekly deadlines when you take a class are really helpful, I think. And then to have a writing group who can keep you accountable is very helpful. So a lot of my online classes, I teach a Motherhood and Words class online, and then I teach other classes and retreats. And many of those groups kind of spin off into their own small writing group, and then they can share writing with each other and just say, you know, let's keep each other accountable, or, you know, let's set a schedule. And so this, I don't think that you have to write every day to be a writer. I think a lot of people say that, and it can be so daunting as you're beginning your story to think, oh my gosh, I have to do this every day. I think if you start with, you know, something that's realistic. Maybe it's 2 hours every Friday morning and you can sit down and write, and that's a prioritized time in your life. So you're not going to say, oh, instead I'm going to, you know, go do something else or whatever it is, because it's easy to push that time, you know, just to fill it with other things. And so you have to be dedicated to the time that you're putting aside for it, but also be realistic and don't beat yourself up if you miss a day or miss a week of it. Just know that you have to get back to it.
Yeah. Is that kind of the biggest challenge, or maybe what are the biggest challenges your students face when they begin to write?
Well, I think that just believing in their story and that their story is worthy is a big challenge for some of my early, you know, my beginning writing students, because I think some people think, you know, who's going to want to read my story, or nothing traumatic happened in my life. You know, I'm basically a pretty happy person. And so it's really getting them to see the value that they can bring to the world in their writing. And memoir is not about, you know, what actually happened as much as it is about that relationship between that situation and what the writer makes of it. And everybody's take on their experience is going to be different, and thus it's, you know, it's worthwhile. And then another thing that they really worry a lot about, beginning students, is kind of worrying about the reliability of their memories and saying, well, gosh, I really don't remember this. How am I going to write a memoir? And one interesting thing I've seen is the more people write, the more they remember about their lives. And so you start to get in this habit and kind of work that muscle of memory, and other memories come flooding back. And I've heard so many students say, I had no idea that this was going to come up. I didn't remember this. And then there's other kind of techniques that we talk about in class about how do you get around things you don't really remember. So there's a term that is called perhapsing that was coined by a writer, Lisa Knopp. And that really is about how you can speculate. So even if you have sort of a, say, a memory of your grandfather and you remember parts of it, but you don't remember the whole thing, or you don't understand what his motivation was in a certain situation, you can kind of wonder that and perhaps it and end up with a really beautiful fleshed out scene that is not lying because you are just wondering, but it has lots of texture and says something greater about this person's experience.
Interesting. Our guest today, Kate Hopper, author of, among other things, Use Your Words, A Writing Guide for Mothers, co-author of Silent Running, a memoir of one family's journey with autism and running. And if you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. Here's the number. It's 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. As you were talking, I was kind of wondering about the process. Do you find people who have an experience first that triggers a memoir, or somebody who says, you know, I'd like to write a memoir, and how do I come up with the experience?
You know, both ways happen, but I think that most people who want to write a memoir, they have some story that they're just feel like they need to get out. Maybe it's a story that's dramatic, or maybe it's a quiet story about a place that meant so much to them. But often they have that focus already, and then they begin to write into it a little more, and that's when you get to the real heart of the story. So I talk it a lot, instead of like, this is the focus of a memoir, I talk about it in terms of, you know, this is the heart of the story, and that heart of the story answers, what is this really about? And sometimes it takes pages and pages and pages to get into that. And so that's where that writing as an act of discovery really happens. Mm-hmm. And then once you have that story, then you can kind of really figure out, okay, what's the best structure for this? And how can I frame it in the time period? Where does it start? Where does it end? And I think, though, when people start writing, kind of thinking chronologically can be really helpful, because you need to actually know the chronology of what unfolded. And it's been funny because I've worked with a few writers recently, and they really felt like, oh, chronology isn't cool, it's not edgy enough, and so they begin to write against chronology, and then what happens on the page is, you know, a little bit like life, it's sort of a jumbled mess with all these problems. And so I think that, you know, I say, you just figure out the chronology, and then if you need to disrupt it for whatever reason, like, you can do that, but helping to know what happened when will allow you to kind of put your story on the page in a way that makes sense to a reader.
When do you know, you know, when does the light bulb come on and say, oh, yeah, I this idea is spot on?
Yeah, well, I think it's like a little bit uncomfortable a lot of the time. And so I tell my, like, when they're like, oh, or something that makes them feel like angry or upset, sometimes that's where a real story lies. And I was actually, this experience happened to me. I'm writing a kind of a long essay on learning to play the electric bass guitar in my mid-40s. And I've been working on this for a while. And as I had gotten into it, I thought, oh my gosh, this is like about being depressed as a 19-year-old and not feeling like I had a voice. And that's when I sort of fell in love with this instrument, even though I didn't start to play it for 25 years. And that kind of gut, like, oh no, I have to go back there and write this story. But that is where kind of that tension happens, is often where that really interesting writing and kind of that growth as a writer and a person continues to happen when we go back to these things that feel a little bit uncomfortable. We know that there's going to be some sort of transformation that happens on the page and also in our own lives as writers.
Is it easier to go back, as you were talking about, is it easier to write the beginning first, or, you know, to go back to the beginning first? Or maybe is it easier to write the ending first?
I think it's, it really depends on the writer. Some people write like all over the place. So when I began to write my memoir that's about my older daughter's premature birth, I called it vomiting. I just went to the coffee shop and just like, blech, you know, I vomited all of these memories and moments and images onto my computer without worrying at all about where they would go or, you know, how does this fit together? So that, I mean, is kind of not worrying about the chronology right at that very beginning piece. And then I began to think, oh, this might go in the beginning, this might be in the middle, this might be in the end. But I know a lot of writers who call themselves modular writers, and they don't worry about like writing linearly at first. They just kind of let it all come out and then begin to piece it together. Okay, this seems like it goes with that. And so it really depends on the person and the writer, but I know a lot of people that work that way.
And, you know, as I think about that comment, I'm thinking that may be a way to overcome writer's block, you know. If you're stuck, but you do have something, you know, you've got some experiences there, you just don't know where to start, just to write about at least pieces of it.
Right. Yeah, I think that's really true. And actually, when I began to work on my memoir, thinking of it as a book felt really daunting to me. And I think that's the piece where writer's block comes in and just shuts people down, because they don't want to, oh, no, this feels too scary or too big or too much work. And so instead, just focus on scenes. So often if I have students who are kind of stuck in that way, I mean, there's different kind of clustering activities that you can do where you're like trying to think a little bit less linearly and a little more, make more associations and just see what comes up and try to make it fun again. And so, yeah. Or, and just say, like, why don't you focus on some main scenes that you know need to be in your story that you think about and that come back to you again and again, and write those out in as much detail as possible, and then figure out where they go and how they connect to each other later down the line. But I think the biggest thing for people who are easily stuck is to just keep writing. So find ways to trick yourself to continue to get words on the page.
Let's take a call here. Alice in Fond du Lac will give you a chance. Alice, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Thank you. Well, a couple things. I'm wondering if Kate has a website that she could share with the listeners, as well as does she do any kind of newsletter? I'm on a couple different writers' newsletters, and they give good ideas, and they kind of perk me up to keep me going with my writing. So I don't know if that's something that she offers. So those are two questions I have. The other one is, I took a memoir class this past summer in the Right by the Lake and with the UW-Madison, and it was well done, but what I went away with was the question of, when is a person doing the writing for their own personal therapy about, let's say, a very traumatic life situation, and when is it a memoir? I guess my experience was that there was so much trauma in this among the people who attended this class that I went away traumatized. I didn't realize that was memoir, and so I just kind of wrote off memoir. I thought, I'm not going to do that. So can you kind of explain that a little bit?
Sure. Those are great questions, Alice. And I think that this is something that's really interesting. As a teacher, I have to think a lot about this because you don't want people to feel traumatized in a class. One thing that I always say is, you know, this is going to be therapeutic. The process of writing and really reckoning and diving deep into your past, I mean, it can re-traumatize people who've experienced trauma. So, creating ways to have breathing room as a writer, you know, I say, you know, take 10 minutes, set a timer, and then take a break, go for a walk. If you're writing about something that's really intense. Also, there are different ways to do that by, you know, writing in the third person, writing in the past tense rather than the present, which can really kind of bring you back to that moment in a way. So the process of writing a memoir can be very therapeutic and transformative, but at the end, you don't want it to feel like therapy. And so that's where the craft comes in. And so sometimes I feel like that sort of very therapeutic writing sometimes happens at the beginning. Maybe you're really angry about something and you just have to vent on the page. And that's not what people want to read. They're not going to be able to relate to it. And so that's where revision comes in and is really important so that you can make sure that you've actually crafted this and you have characters that are fully fleshed and that it isn't a narrator who is just kind of, you know, vomiting in this anger or whatever onto the page, because that's just not going to allow other readers into it. And so that sort of distance that you get in the revision process is really critical. But I also think that as a teacher, one thing I have to remind my students, you know, remember that this is a writing class. So we have this range of things that we're going to be talking about, and always try to bring it back to craft and class, because we don't want it to spin off into a therapy group, because that's not fair to the other people who are in the class. And then in terms of my website, it's just www.katehopper.com, and I do send out a newsletter, you know, with upcoming classes and information and sometimes some writing tips, so that you can access on my website as well.
And again, that's katehopper.com. And she, by the way, is our guest today as we talk about how to write your memoir. If you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. Number to call 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Dave Potratz, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Talking about writing your memoir today with our guest, Kate Hopper, who teaches online. She teaches at Ashland University's Low Residency MFA program, and she also teaches at Modern Well and the Loft Literary Center in Madison and leads retreats for women in the Midwest. She lives in Minneapolis with her family. Her books are a couple of books, Ready for Air, A Journey Through Premature Motherhood, and Use Your Words, A Writing Guide for Mothers, and she's co-author of Silent Running. So it's great to have her along. Questions or comments for her, and I hope you'll join in. Are you writing a memoir? How's it going? When did you know it was time to compose that story? Are you new to writing, or have you been doing it a long time? Those are some of the things you might bring up. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. A listener called to say and this kind of goes along a little bit with what Alice was saying. This listener said she had PTSD because of traumatic childhood events and was told to write about it, and it helped her heal. She wanted to hear a discussion on how writing can help with trauma. And have you seen that in the people you work with, Kate?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been actually a lot of research on that. There's a academic James Pennebaker, who has done work, I think, out of Texas, and his kind of work is writing to heal, and it would be something for this listener to check out, but that you have to write both what happened and how you've been feeling about it in order to kind of get those benefits. So it's not just that this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened kind of writing, but you really have to examine, okay, how did I feel about this? How did it change me? And that's where the healing benefits, I think, especially come out. But I have seen that with my students that, I mean, I have intense loss. And so last fall, I was teaching two different classes. And among my students, there were loss of children. There was domestic violence. There was rape. There was illness. And it was a heavy fall for me. I was feeling that but I could see how writing about it was allowing them to let go of some of these experiences and forgive themselves especially when there's shame involved, and it's shame that's misplaced. There's so much shame, I think, that especially women carry around about some past events, especially things like rape and sexual assault and that sort of thing. And to be able to write your way through that and kind of let it go a little bit has been really amazing to see. So I think it's very valuable, and I think it can be really intense. I mean, as Alice said, it can re-traumatize people. So, I mean, to have the support that you need around it is really important. And maybe it's a writing trauma class, or maybe you're doing some, you know, other reading that can workbooks that can help you move through it. I think is important, so that you have the support you need when it becomes really intense for you is important.
Kind of what you were talking about there caused me to think about names. What about putting real people's names in your memoir? After all, you're telling a story that's close to you. How do you handle names?
Well, I think it's tricky. And again, it probably depends on the story. But for me, if it's a close friend or family member, I put their real names in the story. And then if it's doctors, like in my memoir, I changed all the doctors and nurses' names just to protect them. If it's not somebody that's close to me, I always change their name. And if it's something where it's maybe more of their story, so this is a challenge that comes up for a lot of my students, that they have something that they want to write, but part of the story maybe isn't their story to tell. And I always say, you know, whatever has happened to us, whether it's something happened to someone and that affected us, we still own our experience of that, and we deserve to be able to write that. But then you have to be a little careful at the end before you decide to publish, and not to think about this at the beginning of the writing process, because it can really make people self-censor. If they're worried, oh, I can't put this out there, they actually won't get to the heart of their writing because they're so nervous about that. So I think nobody's going to see it at the beginning. And then if you get to a place where you're ready to send it out in the world, think about, okay, what do I really need to have in here? Is there stuff that I have to take out to protect people I love? As long as it doesn't compromise the truth of my story, or can I change names of people to protect them? So I think that is just really an ethical thing that you have to think about when you're writing about other people's experiences in addition to your own.
Yeah. And to go a little further, what if you write your heart out and you've dealt with the names, but you don't really have an ending with a moral? Or what if your memoir doesn't solve a question, or maybe have a resolution to it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I what?
Think, well, then you just haven't worked hard enough. But I think actually the idea of a moral is really dangerous. Like, you don't want to. So I learned this kind of, you don't want that sort of summy-uppy feeling at the end of a book or an essay, because it just, that's not really how life works. It's much messier than that. And so what I'm looking for in a memoir is some sort of shift in the narrator. Like, how has whatever experience this narrator gone through changed how they see the world, changed how they see themselves, how are they different? And so if I read a book, a manuscript for somebody, and I'm not getting that, that's the first thing I ask them. What would you say? How do you think you've changed? Like, how are you different because of this? And if they can't articulate that, they haven't done enough reflection yet. And so, and often that happens when a book is still on that surface level. And so that's what can feel episodic, with that this happened, then this happened, rather than diving into each of these moments of their story and saying, okay, how did I change here? How am I different? What's going on? And the way to get to that is by asking questions. So I really, you know, you need to interrogate your experience and figure out, okay, why was this so upsetting to me? Where did this come from? And if you can show that on the page, there's almost always shifts that you can see happening with this narrator. And then to me, it's a successful memoir.
So I can see that's part of your approach to teaching memoir writing to others, is how do what other things go into your presentation or your work with people in workshops?
Well, I'm really craft focused, and so usually if I'm teaching like I'm teaching an 8-week class at Modern Well, which is a co-working space for women in Minneapolis, and it's a women's memoir class. And so each week I break up, you know, this week we're going to talk about character development, this week we're going to talk about reflection, this week we're going to talk about place, this week we're going to talk about structure. And so these are all things that have to go into a successful memoir. So, I mean, creative nonfiction really pulls from the lyricism from poetry and all of these other craft aspects from fiction. And so that's something that people sometimes don't think about either. Like, how do you craft a scene? And what scene will hold this reflection? And what are my main themes? And kind of how can they thread throughout the book? And so really getting to think about that on that level has been so helpful for students. And then they can take that all back to their own story and begin to plug it in.
Interesting. Nina from Germantown emailed to say the timing of this program on memoir writing couldn't be more perfect, since November coming here is National Novel Writing Month, where writers are encouraged to write 50,000 word works in 30 days. Although the word novel is in the title, it really encourages and supports all writers. Nina says many places, such as libraries, offer programs or spaces for writing groups to gather during November. Maybe there's a writing group waiting for you as you listen to us talk today. So she wants people to contact their local library at nanowrimo.org. So nanowrimo.org for more information. And she says, as an avid reader, thank you for encouraging everyone to write. Should everybody write?
Yes. I think that it would be we'd live in a different world, frankly, if everyone was writing about their lives. It makes us better people, more self-aware. It makes us more empathetic. I mean, I think that's one of the big things for me. I've presented a lot on kind of the craft of empathy and how you can write your way into a more empathetic state of being, especially if you have a conflicted relationship with somebody and you go in and begin kind of thinking about, like, well, perhaps do that, perhaps in exercise, and think what might have been motivating them, what was really going on for this person. I mean, when we force ourselves to kind of question motives and try to walk in someone else's shoes, whether it's through reading or actually writing, I feel like that makes us more empathetic, and we certainly all need that right now, I think.
Yeah. Let's go to a draft. When you have a draft, certainly in your classes, I assume the writers are all sharing their drafts with you to look at, or at least pieces of them. Mm-hmm. What types of draft readers should one seek out?
Well, I think a class is great for that, too, if people are just getting that feedback and support. And in an early stage, I think that having too many readers can be kind of disorienting to a writer.
Yeah.
if they haven't figured out kind of what is that true story that I'm working on. But I think that the readers that you want are other writers or people interested in writing. Avid readers are great. But I always caution people against having their family members read their writing, especially in the early stages, and especially if those family members are in the story, because again, then they begin to kind of not write the true story or everything, or they're worried too much about what these other readers are going to say. And the other problem with having people that are really close to you, close friends or family, read your work is they might have a lot of information about the situation that is not actually on the page. And so they're bringing all of that knowledge to the page as they read and filling in blanks. And if you have a reader maybe who doesn't know you as well, somebody from a class or a writing group, those kind of big spaces where you're like, oh, we're missing this whole piece, or this is repetitive, or, you know, they can see that a little more clearly. And so I really encourage people to have sort of readers who are not close friends or family members, especially in the early stage. And then when you want to share this with your family and friends later just to get their okay, that's totally fine. But make sure your story feels solid to you and that you've written the story you feel like you need to write first.
You've read so many, and as part of your classes, and you have so many writers around you all the time. Have those writers changed the way you think about writing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've changed the way that I think about life and being in the world. It's really, I feel like it's such an honor to do this kind of work and be able to read so many different people's experience where they are being fully vulnerable and honest about, because that's not really how we talk to each other out in the world. And so it really is a gift to be able to see that. And I mean, as I said earlier, I've lots of these people are dealing with lots of loss and hard situations. And so that just generally makes me a more grateful person in the world to think. I mean, sometimes it raises my anxiety level too, but to be grateful every day for kids who are healthy and, you know, or health and all of these other things, I think is also a good place to be. But just the bravery of certain students and putting things out there and how they've dealt with family members and things like that, I'm always learning from my students. So I feel like I have sort of the dream job in that way, that I'm giving to them, but they're I'm also learning from them always. So I feel so grateful for that.
Yeah. You know, it feels like memoirs are always coming out, especially from celebrities. And I saw the English comedian Eric Idle has a new memoir out. And he said in an interview that writing about yourself is an odd mix of therapy and lap dancing. Exciting and yet a little shameful. What's the shame in writing about your life experience?
You know, I don't think there's any shame. So I actually really, I mean, funny, but I disagree with that completely because, I was at a panel a few years ago at a writing conference, and all the writers on the panel were parents. And many of them said some variation of, you know, the fact that writing was selfish, and I was stunned because yes, it takes time, and sometimes it takes time away from our families and friends if we're really making it a priority. But again, I really think that it makes us better people, like who are more self-aware and more empathetic and kinder to ourselves and each other. I mean, I think there's a way that we're allowed to forgive ourselves when we write for things that we've done in the past or ways that we've acted, and kind of processing that on the page just makes us interact with the people in our lives in a different and more thoughtful way. So I think that there's no shame in writing about it. You know, and we're often included, especially, you know, oh, it's navel gazing. It's so self, you know, you're so self-absorbed. And I have so rarely found that in a piece of writing that I roll my eyes when somebody says that. But, you know, occasionally, if you do come across a piece of writing that feels self-absorbed, for me, that's the writer still being at the surface of their story, or maybe being scared still to look at what really happened and kind of take responsibility for their actions. And so that's where I just continue to ask questions like, you know, this seems like you might go a little deeper here. What was really going on? You know, just in a nice way, kind of nudge them into that kind of revelation place, and it works. You know, I'm working with a woman now who was kind of like, oh, thank you so much for asking these questions, because I've gone deeper and I've had to think more seriously about this topic, and so that feels really satisfying. And I think that's the place where all memoirists really want to be. They want to go to that deep place, but sometimes it's scary to go there.
Yeah, and I'm sure there have been probably many times when you've said, boy, this, you can get this published. When does your memoir attract the attention of an agent or an editor? Or how does that path to being published work?
Yeah, it's a hard path for most people, actually. I mean, occasionally you have, you know, writers who've published something, you know, a short essay somewhere, or especially if it's in a big, you know, like New York Times or Modern Love column or something, that agents will often, like, pick, you know, send them email and say, hey, do you have a book? And, you know, so that's a great way to get attention of agents, is put part excerpts of the story out there and get them published. But for most people, you have to have at least part of the memoir written, and then you need a book proposal. So I just taught a book proposal class at the Loft on Saturday, and it's a lot of work to kind of pull together, you know, an overview and all these different components, and really chapter summaries and market, and then some sample chapters of your book. So some people can sell a book, a memoir, on a proposal, which is, you know, these overview, different components, and then also sample chapters. But lots of people need to have the full book before they can start querying agents and sending it out. And then you just have to be prepared for rejection, because you're going to get a lot of rejections. And this is where you just have to keep believing in your story. And so I was joking with one of my students in that process, and I said, here's the list of all these places that rejected my books. And I was like, and this is just one of the books, and this is the only one time it was sent out. So, I mean, the biggest thing to remember is that if you believe in your story and you feel like it has a place in the world and might help somebody, just don't give up on it and keep writing, keep revising so it's the strongest writing you can make it. And then also just keep sending it out there. And there's tons of small presses as well, university presses. And so there's lots of different ways to get a book out into the world. And just don't give up, because you only need one person to say yes.
Yeah. John wondered if people should write for themselves or write for the reader.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it depends on what it is. So if it's an article for a specific, you know, journal or paper, you kind of have the audience in mind already. But I really think that when you start out, you want to be writing this for yourself, so that you can get to that. So you're not thinking about the audience in that way, and you're not censoring based on who you think it's going to be for. So first, think about it as yourself, and then as you begin to revise and draft more, then you start thinking about the audience. I know with my memoir, I did think about the audience because, you know, my daughter was only 8 weeks early, you know, which sounds like not, you know, a lot, but it not compared to some of the babies. And some of those babies didn't survive, or they had, you know, severe disabilities coming out of the neonatal intensive care unit. And so as I was writing and revising, I wanted to make sure I was being respectful of those parents who had lost so much, and kind of balancing that with the truth of my experience. So I think it enters in, but not to worry too much about audience as you begin to write.
Kate, you have a conversation with Bonnie Ruff coming up. Bonnie, author of Beyond Birds and Bees, if I'm not mistaken, November 8th?
Yes. So that's at Majors & Quinn Booksellers in Minneapolis. And Bonnie has a new book about kind of raising kids who are have positive feelings about sex ed and all of that. So it's going to be an interesting conversation coming up. And it's free and open to the public.
And you're also teaching Motherhood in Words online again, beginning in sometime in January?
Yes, at the end of January. And that's a 10.5-week class. So people can find more information about that on my website as well.
And again, your website
is katehopper.com.
katehopper.com. Boy, what a pleasure to talk with you today, Kate. Thank you so much for taking time.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Larry. I appreciate being here.
It was a lot of fun. Appreciate it.
It was.
You know, we've got a couple of guys coming up on the show who could probably write pretty good memoirs, too. And I'll talk about them in just a minute. But again, a big thanks to Kate Hopper. And she has a great website. Go to katehopper.com, KateHopper.com. And you're going to find out about her workshops and the online things that she's going to be teaching. And hey, it's online. You can take it even though you may not be close to Minneapolis, but it doesn't matter, because Kate can handle your questions and deal with you online. Well, those guys that I was talking about are the weather guys, John Martin and Steve Ackerman. They could probably both write their own memoirs about all kinds of things. And they won't be doing that next. They'll be talking about climate and weather next here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.